give me one shot here on a blue chip stock, believe me, Kevin, the only problem you're going to have is that you didn't buy more.
Nobody knows if the stock is going to go up, down, sideways, or in circles.
What's going on, NBA draft fans? Your boy is back, the Wolves of Ball Street, your favorite draft analyst here with another episode of the Draft Act NBA Draft Podcast. My name is Corey Tulliba, and we have a special episode today. Albert can't be with us, so instead, you may be familiar with him from his time spent on Morning Wood, NBA morning show, during the bubble. We have Larry Tominia in the house.
What's up, guys? I am happy to be here. Thank you for having me. Albert, I'm sorry. I hope to try to fill your shoes as best I can.
Well, wearing that that suit you got on, you're certainly dressed for success today. So,
well, here's the deal. I thought about this, and I realized that, like, you know, NBA Twitter and analysis in the world now has gotten so far. Like, I feel like, you know, Stuart Scott brought cool to analyst journalism and everything like that.
Sure.
And between that and, like, Zuckerberg wearing sandals in his office kind of took things so far the other way to where we get to say things like get the bag and think we're cool, to where now, like, I'm starting to go the other way. I'm starting to bring it back. Maybe this is just what getting old is.
I guess this is growing up.
I guess this is growing up.
So Larry is and myself are tradition dating back a number of years for draft night in particular was always we would order like a Crave case from White Castle and just eat White Castle until we wanted to curl up into a ball and die and watch the NBA draft.
Usually around pick three.
Yeah, around pick three, we were wanted to go into a food coma. But other than that, unlike all of you sickos out there that are listening and watching and following the draft all year round, like myself, Larry does not get into the draft until, you know, probably a couple of weeks before, typically, just so there's a little background. Maybe he's, you know, familiar with a few guys' names through podcasts every now and then. But what I wanted to do today is go through the top 11 prospects that are listed on the draft deck, our consensus draft rankings, and see what the almost casual NBA draft observer thinks of these prospects pretty much based off of YouTube research, which I feel like there's a lot of in the, you know, last couple of weeks before the draft when people actually start paying attention. They don't have time to watch 700 games from 100 different prospects, so they do their research on the internet. So Larry being pretty unfamiliar, and I chose 11 instead of 10 because Larry is a Knicks fan. You know, we are New Yorkers after all, and the Knicks have the 11th pick, so I figured why not go through potentially guys that are going to be at or around possibly available at the 11th pick. So we're going to start at 11. Larry ranked based off of the YouTube highlights, his top 11 guys. We're going to go 11 down to one. He wrote notes and we're going to talk this through. Maybe us sickos are overthinking some things, and maybe we're just missing and because we're just way too deep into this. So at number 11,
I'll explain how I came to this and where I'm at. So, yeah, as Corey's explaining, I am the furthest from what I would call a college basketball fan. I'm going to say I maybe watched 3 games maximum this year. I don't get into the tournament. I don't do brackets. So I am a humongous NBA fan. I indulge the NBA like crazy. I love the contract side of it. I watch a ton of NBA games. So when Corey came up with this idea and gave me this task, I was like, I actually really like that. That's a cool idea. Because, you know, I, again, obviously with drafts, things, you know, smoke gets blown in certain directions. I'm basing this off of, I've given myself a maximum of 10 minutes of highlight videos. So basically, I go through YouTube, I type in, you know, Paolo Banchero highlight videos, I watch 10 minutes, and I basically make my prediction based off of that. So that being said, when I'm making my predictions and I'm going through what I'm doing, it's based off of 10 minutes of highlight video for the sake of, you know, this is a task that can, if I really wanted to, I can spend weeks on end researching these guys. But that's not the point of the task. The point of the task is just eye test based off of what I'm seeing and how I feel like this would translate into the NBA. So I'll explain to you, get further into my process. So the stats I looked up, what I did was is that Corey gave me 11 names. So it's not like I got 20 prospects. I made it 11. He gave me 11 names, and it's to list these 11 names in the order of which I think they would get drafted, not based off of what team is picking at what time. It's entirely based off of these are 11 guys. What do you do in the order, you know, in which you think is best prospect to not? What I did was is that I started off by going through. I just wrote down, you know, height, weight, and then I went down just points, rebounds, and assists. And I started there and for each person. And then, you know, I wrote that list down, and then I went one by one, started going through, you know, their highlights. Now, the way Corey sent me the list, he scrambled the names and threw them all to me, so it didn't seem like, you know, he was trying to push me one way or another. Now, when, you know, just being an NBA fan, listening to podcasts, indulging, you're going to stumble across these names just accidentally. So even if I don't watch college basketball, I'll tell you before we even start, the three names that I knew was Chet Holmgren, Paolo Banchero, and Jabari Smith. That's the only three names that I've ever heard of going into this task. Now, that being said, I couldn't tell you if Jabari Smith was a point guard, if he was a shooting guard. I had no clue. I just knew the name Jabari Smith. So, you know, that's my point, is I heard of these people. I didn't know anything about their game or anything of that sort. I also wrote down what college each person plays for. And by the time I got to the fourth one, I was like, this is pointless. I don't know why I'm doing this because, you know, I have no idea what Auburn did last year. So, you know, but I know who, what school they play for. So I guess that's cool. So yeah, I mean, I love the task. I love the idea. And after I did everything, then I actually looked at a couple. Top tens for different mocks and different people. And it was actually closer than I thought it would be. Some things, some ways, and I realized pretty much, you know, from 4 to 11 is kind of fucking everywhere anyway. So, you know, I think it was a cool, great task for me. And even it would, the big part of it for me is that it got me really excited for this upcoming draft to see what is going to happen now, because now that I feel like I have some skin in the game. Also, before we get started, what I do want to say is after watching a ton of these highlight videos, you know, I'm basically just clicking like top links and going through their highlight videos. And again, as someone who doesn't enjoy college basketball or anything like this, most of the people that I'm watching explain to me their different videos were, you know, stuff like no ceilings and everything like that. And Jesus Christ, were they really bad with no energy or anything like that. So someone who doesn't ever really deep dive into no ceilings content, but do hear it from here from time to time, because again, I don't like college basketball. I do appreciate your enthusiasm when you guys are going over videos way more than I did 2 days ago or whatever the case may be. So you guys are doing, now that I actually have something else to compare your guys' work to, pretty good. Good job.
You hear that, guys? You hear that, guys? We got the stamp of approval. We finally made it.
He's fine.
We finally made it. So that's kind of the task. That's the perspective that Larry is going to bring to us. And I'm excited to actually, teach him how to pronounce Paolo Banchero's name. So just to give you that shows immediately, you know, where we're at as far as his knowledge coming into this whole thing.
I was going to let you guys know that, yeah, like any name I say is based off of me reading off the paper and guessing. So right. The proof of the point even more.
This is Larry being a substitute teacher and reading off the list of names for attendance that he's never seen. All right. Number 11, your least favorite prospect of the grouping that I gave you.
So this guy, when I watched his videos, I couldn't be less than impressed. Like, I'm not stoked about this guy at all. And the Knicks picking 11 makes me even more worried. Now, this guy's name has been, you know, according to my last day of looking at other people's mock drafts, his name has, he's been going up. And so Dyson Daniels is my 11th guy. He does not do it for me at all. basically the notes I have for this guy is this. You know, I see a lot of pump fakes, a lot of driving to the basket after the pump fake. You know, he can finish them, but I just don't see this working at an NBA level. He's shooting 25% from the three-point line. So that being said, no one's falling for his pump fake from behind the three-point line for him to pump and drive if he's shooting 25%. So, you know, there's a lot of putback highlights in there. You know, it's a lot of – again, this is not going to translate to what the NBA is. He works hard, but I just don't see any special skill that I can rely on. You know, when I think of guys and I think when I go to make my prospects, I try to translate – where can I see this guy on a playoff team? You know, I want to see, you know, I want at least a Shane Battier out of the first round of the draft. Something of that sort where I can at least see the fifth guy. Is this a guy a starter? Can he be off the bench for competing for a championship team? Dyson Daniels scares me. I just don't see what skill he can rely on. Now, again, to further prove my point in regards to when I'm watching these highlight videos, the point that I'm watching a 10-minute highlight video. I promise you, when these people are chopping up these videos and putting them on YouTube, they're not showing, hey, look at this guy, the way this guy switches on pick and rolls. You know, that's not the videos that we're getting here. So, you know, I don't know a lot of the defense that I'm getting at a lot of these guys. So, you know, the defense aspect is just not shown on a lot of highlight videos. So for all I know, Dyson Daniels could be an incredible defender. I mean, he's got huge size, 6'6". But that being said, I'm terrified of his offensive game, and in this NBA today, you need to be able to produce somewhat offensively, whether it be catch and shoot, something of that sort, and I just don't see how his game translates.
All right. I love where we're starting on this. One, I think this is predominantly the Knicks faithfuls probably like ideal scenario right now. People like – I think Knicks fans are dying for Dyson Daniels. All right, so – little background with Dyson Daniels. Interestingly enough, the stats that you're looking at are off a little bit.
Sure.
So he played for the G League Ignite, which is, you know, the NBA's program where they allow the best high school kids to come and play instead of going to college and prepare for the draft. Dyson Daniels, young 18. So they only have, I think, like 12 games worth of stats available online. That's what you see. That's what is available on a number of different sites. But, you know, at No Ceilings, we have a partnership with Instat, which is kind of like comparable to Synergy. And we have the full slate of 20 whatever games. Now, Dyson Daniels, even still, is not a knockdown shooter by any means, but he's a little bit better there than the number that you're seeing. He also ended up shooting the last 10 games over 40% from three in that span. So you see the upward trajectory there. You mentioned the size at 6'6". He actually has grown to where he's now almost 6'8". In that time. But so here's the role that I envisioned. And when you're watching him, he's just not flashy. He's one of these boring guys who he does a lot of like the little things that don't show up. He's probably one of the top perimeter defenders in the draft. And he has that size where he can switch on to multiple positions, hold up. So again, you're not really seeing a whole lot of that other than you probably got some like chase down blocks in the highlight videos. He's a good passer. I think the shot I buy just cause I think the form's pretty good. He just, you know, and again, he improved a lot. He definitely needs to speed up the release, which was a point of emphasis in his pre-draft training. But
the vibe I'm getting is that he killed it at the combine. So everyone is stoked about him now.
He did. But he was getting a lot of this hype before the combine too.
Got it.
He's been a guy that has been like a riser steadily throughout the whole process.
Sure.
Partly because he was definitely a guy that came in as somebody worth monitoring. I think he was probably ranked somewhere around like 17, 18 initially coming into the year. And one, he grew during the year, so that helps. But he was like the steadiest producer on that Ignite team, where there was one of the kids came in as like the number three prospect. And now some mocks have him going in the 30s. Like, I don't even think I gave you his name because he didn't make the list. So he's one of the guys who actually produced against pros. That's the other thing. He's playing against pros instead of playing against college kids.
Sure.
He's actually, to me, the guy that I thought you were going to like the most, because he's typically the guy that you just value a lot on the court.
So for, you know, everyone, like
there's no doubt that if you watched his games, you'd be like, oh, that's who I play with. I play like.
So
when you do, yeah, you're the Larry player comp.
And that terrifies me. So, you know, and, you know, here's the deal. And again, catching, you know, that pump fake and drive is, I got a good first step. Just want to brag a little bit. But, so, you know, that being said, what, you know, what terrifies me is this. When I, if I'm a GM in the NBA, I'm not even making trades or signing free agents or whatever the case may be. I'm not confident in betting on high, you know, high potential. It's not, that's not how I want to, that's not how I operate. I want to see what can this guy do for me now and then grow the rest around him. You know, the bank on ceiling, the players who reach that ceiling compared to not, it's not even close. You know, I feel like since Jason Kidd developed a three-point shot, we feel like every player can. You know, I just don't it's so few and far between where players develop one skill that they're so – you know, not good at to being so successful at that one skill that it's very difficult for me to buy in. So, you know, I rather take players that at least I can guarantee at least one thing about it. And for Dyson Daniels, I'm just terrified based off of this, you know, the stuff that I saw, because there's nothing that I feel confident enough that this guy can play in a finals rotation. You know, can he be a great defender? Yeah. Probably, but great defenders today, there isn't that Tony Allen type player that even exists anymore that's a lot that can make it. You know, it's very difficult. I mean, Tony Allen is what? Frank Ntilikina, right? Some version of that that just doesn't exist in today's NBA. You got to be able to shoot, score, corner three, something. And his offense, to me, it was a disaster.
So here's a couple of guys I'll kind of compare him to give you a clearer picture, I think, of what his baseline will be. Like Derek White in the finals.
Sure, which is good. That's a good one. But Lonzo, Derek White, you know, Derek White at least shooting 40-something percent from three at certain points.
Right, right. And he struggled as well. But I think Derek White, Lonzo Ball, like these big kind of guys who are point guards, but they also aren't really like the primary point guard playmaker. That's kind of the trend. That's the direction. All right. Number 10.
Point guards, do they still exist? Because all the numbers you get, all the players you're giving me, I don't think there is one.
Well, they're not in this draft in particular. There's not a lot of good ones.
All right. Sure. So number 10, I went with Jalen Duren.
Okay.
Who I actually really like. You know, he's a humongous person. His size and strength is crazy. You know, I think he's going to be an impact player. I could see him translate right into the NBA. I really do love mostly everything about him. You know, the things that I am worried about is he can't shoot free throws. He can't shoot, you know, I don't need him to shoot threes or even mid range, but to be a real rim running center to compete in the playoffs and everything like that, he needs to be able to hit free throws a little bit. If not, he's going to be an off the bench center. So, you know, to be a starting center, if he take that free throw percentage and can turn it up, I think this guy's a starting center. You know, and I really do love his versatility. I feel like he can guard most positions. He can switch and not be too worried about it. You know, I think that he's just – his size is humongous. You know, the only reason why I put him 10 is I'm just scared – you know, centers just aren't worth it as much in the NBA anymore. You know, this guy – 10 years ago, 12, 15 years ago, is probably going to be a, you know, top five pick. I just think in today's NBA, the center position is just you have so many players who can kind of fill what he can do. But that being said, you know, if you ask me, would I rather pay DeAndre Ayton the max or draft Jalen Duren, I'm probably going to take Jalen Duren for what he can offer you at that salary. You know, you get a lot of the same qualities. You know, we're, you know, probably not as good as a player, but for the dollar amount difference, he's just going to be a super impactful player for a lot of teams. I am a little worried about his foul potential. He might come in there and get three fouls in 10 minutes, but in general, I think you can kind of work on that. I'm not too worried about, you know, him figuring that part out, but I think his size, strength, absolutely crazy, absolute monster. versatility is insane. I think he can, you know, if he gets switched on to a power forward, shooting guard in some circumstances, I wouldn't be too worried about it. I think he can kind of hang. So I think he's, you know, he's going to be an important player. I think he's going to be around for a while. Worst case scenario, be a backup center on a championship team for, you know, years to come.
I got to say, you nailed this one. This is exactly what months and months of hard work is in a short amount of time span. So,
minutes, guys.
So here's the thing with Duren that I don't know if you got through your minimal research. He also reclassified. So he's like one of the youngest players in the draft. He's actually supposed to be a senior in high school this year.
So, you know, not so much with Jalen Duren, because I think he could be an instant impact player. But just to kind of bring out my perspective, too, when it comes to a lot of these guys, I know everyone is scared of the 23-year-old, you know, college kid, and he's old and everything like that. And I'll tell you, for me personally, my perspective, I'd rather go get those guys, you know, just because I feel like everybody wants, you know, the idea is to have the youth, right? You have the youth, that means you have that player the longest period of time. The problem with that philosophy for me is that those young guys usually take 2 to 3 years to develop. So you're sitting here spending 3 years of NBA money getting these players up to par. And by the time they usually figure it out, it's on another team. That's statistically what happens, is that these guys spend 3 years riding the bench, getting minimal minutes. By the time, you know, their second contract comes around, you're in this weird spot of, what do I do with paying this 21-year-old who really kind of hasn't shown me enough, but showed me some? And then inevitably they go to another team and they either play well, or, you know, or the NBA career is just not for them. But when they go play for this other team, it's almost like you're the college getting them ready for their next opportunity. So it's like, I'd rather go after the guy who's 22, his body, you know what his body's going to be. And you can, you know, at that point, you can kind of get an idea of what you're like, what you have. If not, you know, 3 years in, by the time that player is 24, 25, you know what you got. You know, at that point, a few players go from 25 to 26, and you have no idea what you get. You know, they don't turn to all-stars at that point. You know what you have at that point.
Yeah, I mean, anybody who listens to, you know, my stuff knows that I'm big on respect.
Which isn't me.
Right, yeah, well, not – but you have – glowing words for the crew. You know that I value guys who have produced and show that they get better every year in college and develop in that trajectory. I think the thing with guys like that is you typically don't see them take the Jimmy Butler path with, you know, guys that play 4 years in college and all of a sudden exceed expectations in such a crazy way that they become superstars. Damian Lillard, Jimmy Butler, like these guys are typically few and far between, so the payoff might not be as high, but you're also getting a guy like Mikal Bridges instead of taking Kevin Knox, and you're actually getting somebody who's worth staying in the draft for. So, but yeah, I agree on the Jalen Duren take. I've been in on him the whole year. I haven't wavered, and I mean, seeing him work out in Portland, like the video, he's just a monster of a kid. And yeah, I saw him in person, and he was doing these, like, in layup lines, he was doing, like, you know, tomahawk dunks, and like he looks so agile for a guy his size. It was kind of unbelievable. All right, at pick 9.
I'm going Johnny Davis out of Wisconsin. The notes I wrote down for him is that he's an offensive weapon. He can do it all, but nothing enough that stands out for me. What worries me is that his 3-point percentage dropped a ton in college. You know, where he shot, he spent 2 years in college, to my knowledge, and his first year was better at shooting from the three than the second. You know, him, the percentage dropping definitely scares me. You know, for me, for him to be a, you know, a full-time starter, he really needs to up that 3-point percentage. If not, you know, I think he could be a great player up the bench. I have him as a low ceiling, high floor guy. You know, I'm not too worried about him being a complete bust, but I don't see him being an all-star one day. I think as a bench guy, that's going to be his inevitable role. Who's going to produce? He's just a complete weapon for sure.
All right. Before we break down Johnny Davis, let's head to the chat. See what they got to say. Yeah. So let's see. Mr. Ray, shout out Shane Battier from your Battier shout out earlier.
Give it up for Shane.
Mino F. When I mentioned we were talking about Dyson Daniels, I'm a Knicks faithful. I prefer Adrian Griffin Jr., Davis, or Mathurin. Let's see. Mr. Ray. Jalen Duren looked superhuman in that Portland gear. He sure did. Kurt agrees with your take on age as well. In the 80s and 90s, everyone came out 21, 22, bald from day one. And Kurt now says that might be a good idea to recap the format of this exercise for those coming in late. Let's talk about it. So for those that are entering the stream late, this
I'm going to tie. That's what everyone needs to know.
Everyone needs to know that Larry dressed to impress for the occasion. And Larry is a casual NBA draft approacher, a guy who is a huge NBA fan, but doesn't get into the draft until, you know, the couple of weeks before the time that we're in now, when a lot of people are starting to get interested in the draft and starting to do their research through YouTube videos, scouting videos, highlights, all that stuff. So I gave Larry an exercise to watch the top 11 guys on the consensus draft rankings at NoCeilingsNBA.com and give me his order just based off of the internet research that he did as a casual fan, as a casual fan would do. I jumbled up the order for him so I wouldn't lead him in one direction or the other. And right now we are at number 9 with Johnny Davis. And you describe Johnny Davis as a high floor, low ceiling guy who needs to improve on his 3-point shot. Now, Johnny Davis is interesting. One, obviously the 3-point shot is the, I think, major concern that most people have with Johnny Davis because, you know, he wasn't the most efficient guy in the world. I will say I'm not concerned about his 3-point shot. The context of that situation was he was the only guy on that team. And so he had to basically bail them out in every situation and take all those tough shots off the bounce that, you know, are going to inevitably lead to having some lower percentages. Would he be a knockdown 3-point shot if you completely eliminated that aspect? I don't think so. But he also is a better shooter than the numbers indicate, in my opinion. I think that with Davis, he's a guy that ultimately, I don't think his ceiling is quite as high as Devin Booker, but that's the kind of guy as a starter, that's kind of the path that you see for Johnny Davis. He is a two-way guy. I will say that. He's one of the best defenders in the draft. He plays both ends, plays his ass off, was not a high recruit. He has that kind of underdog chip on his shoulder mentality that some of these other guys who have been, you know, 5 stars on ESPN, Slam magazine covers, all that. He's got this, he's not that guy. He has that chip on his shoulder that, like, fuck those guys. So I love his competitiveness. I like his scoring package. He's a big time player. He, you know, in a big moment against a big time recruit that I won't mention as to sway your opinions, even though you already have him in. He, in one of the biggest matchups of his year, he hung 37 on the team. So he came out of nowhere, wasn't ranked coming into this season as a draft guy, and shot his way up into the top of the draft. But Johnny Davis is another guy that I think ultimately you would love as a player when he gets to the NBA. And I think if the Knicks end up with Johnny Davis, I've already said that I will buy a Johnny Davis jersey the night of if he gets drafted to the Knicks.
Love that.
At number 8.
So at number 8, this is a guy who I've seen, you know, a few mock drafts. Again, after I did my mock draft, I went and looked at a bunch of others just trying to see, you know, how far off I could possibly be.
Sure.
And I've seen a lot of mock drafts actually have this guy going to the Knicks. And I'm all in. You know, AJ Griffin is my number 8. I would love for him to fall to the Knicks. That would be the best. I think this guy can shoot the shit out of the ball. This guy has range to shoot everywhere. I don't love his form, but the ball does go in when he uses that shot. You know, I love his drive. I love that he pump fakes, drives. He can hit the jumper, you know, pull it from the free throw line. I love the mid-range shot from that. He could just do more than just – he's not just a catch-and-shoot guy. I think he can kind of do a little bit of everything. I don't know what his defense is like, only because, again, these highlight videos are not showing switches. So I'm not too sure what the defense is like. My concern that I have is, why is he averaging 10 points, you know, at Duke if he can shoot from anywhere? So that you know, I don't get that explanation of what on the research I'm doing. I didn't deep dive hard enough. So, yeah, that would be my concern. If you have an answer for me, knock it out. But based off what I watch, you know, this guy, he's dynamite in offense.
I'm probably the biggest AJ Griffin fan in the draft world. So AJ Griffin averaged 10 points a game because AJ Griffin came into the year. I want to say he was probably the fourth or fifth ranked prospect in the class. He is a New York kid, the son of Adrian Griffin Sr., longtime NBA player, coach in the NBA, highly recruited guy. In high school, he had a ankle injury that took him out, that he missed his senior year with COVID and was training in Tampa Bay with his dad in the Raptors and stuff. So he came into the year not having played a ton of basketball, and then he gets into like training camp and injures his knee again. Not the end of the world. He ends up coming back by the beginning of the season, but he's now playing catch up. He's supposed to be the number two guy on this team, and he's playing catch up, coming off the bench. And in that time, you have three other perimeter guys that are probably going to be first round picks or are in contention to be first round picks, plus another older guy who's been on the team who's handling ball handling duties. So he's now coming into a situation where he's like, how do I fit in the best? And as a guy who came in high school that you would say was an off the bounce shot creator slasher type, he was like, okay, I'm going to play my role, space the floor for everybody, cut off ball. And when I get the opportunity to, create my own shot, I'll do it here and there. I'm not going to force anything. And that's kind of the role that he played. And he kind of played it to perfection. I mean, you look at his percentages, he's knocked down from everywhere on the floor.
Everywhere.
At one point for a while, he was shooting over 50% from three. And it was like, it doesn't seem like a fluke. Like
he's shooting NBA threes. Like he's not, everything that I saw and everything I watched, he's shooting NBA threes. Again, I can't stand his form, but he's shooting that ball from everywhere.
That's the big thing, because everybody talks about the wide base. Matt Penny referred to it as the Jeff Bagwell stance, nice, which is a funny throwback.
Pretty good.
But baseball, like you said, it goes in. It goes in. I don't care how he shoots if it goes in like that, right? But so my thing with AJ, you mentioned his defense. He wasn't the best defender this year. I think that's everybody's big issue with him in particular, is that they're worried about his defense. But he is a guy that I'm actually higher on his defense than other people, because I think he's got really good physical tools. He's got a 7-foot wingspan. He's switchable. Multiple occasions he would switch on into a power forward and would not have any issue holding his ground, forcing them into like a tough, like, shitty post shot. He needs to just learn the game more, but he's also one of the youngest players in the draft. He's 18 and he missed 2 years of high school development learning the game. So he's coming into playing in a tough conference and coming off an injury and just kind of getting thrown into the fire. And I think Duke as a whole was pretty bad defensively outside of Mark Williams kind of saving things. Trevor Keel's obviously good on ball. Wendell Moorhead was good as well, but like off ball, I think they all kind of overplayed their men, got back cut, prone to that. He was no different. Plus he's 18. He's got a lot to learn. But I look at him and I'm like, this is what a modern NBA wing looks like. When I see him, I could see Jaylen Brown in him. I could see Jimmy Butler in him. I could see that type of guy. To say that he's going to get to that ceiling, that's obviously up for debate, but those are the type of guys that I see in AJ. So I'm in agreement with you. If he makes it to the Knicks, that's an absolute no-brainer. He is the highest guy ranked on my board right now that you have talked about. Okay, at number seven.
Number seven, this guy, I'm sure a lot of people feel this way. It scares the shit out of me. I have Shaedon Sharpe. Did I say it right?
You did.
Shaedon Sharpe out of Kentucky, which when I went and looked up his Kentucky stats, I was, harder to find than I thought it, than the other players.
Sure.
So, Shaedon Sharpe didn't play. The videos I watched are these high school strange videos,
AAU.
This is what I got out of it. Shaedon Sharpe, it scares the shit out of me. Why didn't he play? I don't know the full answer. I don't think – it doesn't seem like they know the full answer. But, he's working out on his free time, which I can't stand that either. But this is what I got from watching the videos. He's crazy athletic. His release is insanely fast. He's very raw from what I've watched. And what would have been perfect for him? A year of Kentucky. Like, it would have been perfect. If he just needs 1 year, and I really wanted to see him have that year based off what I'm watching, because he scares me. you know, in general, he could be the best player in the draft for all we know. You know, his talent and athleticism is just uncanny, but he's raw. Like, you know, I don't see him running anything that resembles an NBA offense in anything that he's doing. Granted, we didn't see that with LaMelo either. So, you know, I'm not saying that's learnable, but I'm just concerned from what I see. I think he needs to go to the right team to be successful. And, you know, after I went and looked at mock drafts afterwards, you know, I see a lot of sometimes him being picked over to the Kings at four. And Jesus Christ, that terrifies me. So, you know, I think in general, if he gets put in the right circumstance, he could be a Buddy Hield type player, possibly better, you know, depending on what his offense capabilities are. I don't think anyone really knows. I think he's probably the biggest question mark in this draft. And, you know, that being said, I think he has, based off of just this, what I see, this, you know, the stats, based off the numbers, size, he could be the best player in the draft for all we know, but it's just so hard to tell, and it's super raw with the footage that we got.
Again, you nailed this one as well. So Shaedon Sharpe was another guy who reclassified to be in this class. He was not supposed to, he was the number one ranked prospect in the class of or the draft of 2023. So he then reclassifies kind of like mid season. And he's also a guy who didn't have like a lot of, like high-level high school experience either, because he kind of came out of nowhere and went from this unranked guy to all of a sudden destroying the EYBL for a little AAU scene for a hot minute and shot up to be the number one guy in the draft. And you mentioned he could be the number one player when it's all said and done, because you can't teach his athleticism. It's an effortless shot that he shoots, and he could shoot it from everywhere. But he's raw as hell. And when he got to Kentucky and joined the team, he was practicing with them, blah, blah, blah. There were all these rumors, oh, maybe he's going to play at some point, and he didn't. And I think there are teams that are questioning, well, why didn't he play? He's there training. Like, it's not like,
yeah, it reminds me of Ben Simmons. It's the same Ben Simmons stuff, right?
So people are questioning that, when, especially as a team, nobody's seen him because it's COVID, it's all that. They can't come and see him. They can't get him in the gym. The only time they've ever seen him in person is at the combine and in any private workout that they run with him. So how do you look at a guy like that and say, like, because I'm sure in those highlights, you didn't see a lot of passing highlights. It was probably
there's
a lot
no
of scoring.
No
pass.
There's no NBA. There's nothing that resembles an NBA offense. There's not pick and roll. There's nothing.
No, it's pickup. It's him doing his glorified pickup, a lot of off the bounce. And that's insanely valuable, right? But that's why
it's insanely valuable, but what, you know, when he's 6'6", 200 pounds going against 5'10", 180 of me, is that valuable?
I mean, I've seen people less than that dunk on you before at LA Fitness. So
point being, you know, that being said, like that's my point, is that the kid, you know, it's not like he's playing against some crazy competition. You know, I don't need to see Shaedon Sharpe go into LA Fitness and do work and be like, wow, he, you know, that's the guy.
Right. And it's scary. It's scary. I've struggled with my ranking of him, because at times I'm like, oh my God, it's so effortless. There's no way it doesn't translate.
He needs to go to the right team. I mean, that's what it is for me. You know, you get him somehow on one of these teams that, I don't know, I guess maybe next to Dane would be fun. I'm not too sure. You know, we'll see what the case may be. I don't know his defense well enough to know if that would even make sense. But
not great. Not great. Yeah. So, for me,
that's my concern, is he needs to go to the right team. You know, he needs to be on that. He needs a team like the Warriors to have a pick this year, or Denver to somehow have that top 10 pick. You know, something of that sort is kind of what they're looking at. That I think that's what the team he needs to go to. He needs to a team that doesn't need him to produce instantly.
Yeah, for me, it's like if he went to Detroit and he was basically able to be Cade's sidekick and didn't have to worry about playmaking, Indiana with Haliburton, who could do all the stuff and just let him kind of. So that's a kind of ideal scenario. But like you said, the Kings situation is very scary,
terrifying,
even though ultimately it could pay off in the end. At number six.
All right. So this is where I think this is the one that seems to be different from other. This is where it starts to get weird, I guess, in regards to other people. So for the one for me, you know, number six, I have Jaden Ivey.
Okay.
And Jaden Ivey is crazy athletic. You know, he has range to shoot from everywhere, but I don't love a lot of his shot selection. You know, a lot of his shot selection is just unnecessary shots, depending on where it is, in the clock. I don't love what a lot of it. Again, it's not a lot of pick and roll highlight passing videos. It's a lot of just shots that I don't love. A lot of them do go in, not enough for me to take him number four overall. What scares me with Jaden Ivey is I think for him to be a successful player in the NBA is that he needs to draw fouls. You know, if he could draw fouls, get to the free throw line, you know, he's a Dwayne Wade type player if he can pull that off. But he's also shooting 74% of the free throws from the free throw line in college. You know, if he gets that over 80 and can draw fouls, you know, take 12 free throws a game, I think now we're talking. Now, there's some games in there where he's hit nine, you know, he's got nine free throw attempts. He's got to, for me, for this guy to be successful, he's got to be over 10 a game average, not some games hitting nine. I think that's going to be his ultimate success. So if he can pull that off, I think he's going to be a really good player. If he's going to be, because again, I don't think there's nothing that he does that's strong enough for me to tell me that he has something to rely on. And that's what kind of concerns me. He does a lot of things well, but it's like, for me, this is Jimmy Butler before Jimmy Butler, you know, developed to that next level where Jimmy Butler lives at the free throw line. Jaden Ivey, I want to see him live from the free throw line. If he can live from the free throw line, he's going to be a really good player. If he's not going to live from the free throw line, you know, I'm very concerned because, again, it's super Dennis Smithy for me in that regard, where it's a lot of just driving, trying to do crazy finishes, and a lot of shots that I just don't love when you can get a better shot out there. So Jaden Ivey scares me. And again, I know a lot of people have him at four, which scares me even more because the Kings just – that's going to be a nightmare spot for him, in my opinion.
It is. It's really not the ideal scenario for him. All right, so – you remember when we went to see Derrick Rose for the first time before his injuries and we were like, this guy's an alien?
I recall. New Jersey Nets.
Back when the Nets were in New Jersey. I think Vince Carter hung 75 points on the Bulls that night in particular.
Wasn't it like Sasha Vucevic, one of those guys? A Laker got paid, went to the Nets, and he absolutely killed it that night.
I don't remember in particular. One of the times that we saw Vince, he absolutely destroyed. Sure. So Jaden Ivey, he's not prime Derrick Rose athleticism, but he's pretty fucking impressive. And yeah. I saw him from behind the bench this year and his speed, the difference between like obviously Dennis Smith and look, people want to look and talk about Dennis Smith with hindsight, but he went in the top 10, right? And right. So, like, people were high on him.
Statistically, like, six of these guys are not going to work out.
Of course.
This is a big part. Again, we're covering that why I am a not college basketball fan, right? Is because I don't enjoy hype that much. It's just not for me. You know, maybe because I'm just a upset Knicks fan, but, you know, getting excited about hype for play and getting that player and then be like, all right, well, let's wait 2 years and see what happens. Like, it's just not fun for me. And statistically, we put all of our cards in the deck, like, this is the guy. And then, you know, if you got a bench player, you're like, wow, successful draft. Like, you know, and for me, it's not fun for me in that regard. So statistically, a lot of these guys are not going to work out. I understand the name is a lot of fun on paper and it's fun to debate all these things, but statistically, it's not going to work out. And at one point, there was a ton of Dennis Smith guys. And Jaden Ivey reminds me a lot of Dennis Smith Jr.
Okay, so I'm way more confident in Ivey than Dennis Smith Jr. for a couple of reasons. One, Dennis Smith Jr. is just not nearly as big as Jaden Ivey is. Jaden Ivey's a big dude. He's just – his size is way better than
– he's bigger. I looked it both up. He is bigger.
Yeah. So – and I honestly, he looked even bigger. Like, in person, he looked bigger than what I think – he's listed at. Two, I love how much he improved from 1 year to the other. Like, he's a worker. He's a sophomore. He came back. He could have entered the draft last year, probably would have got drafted, and he came back and turned himself into a lottery pick. The shot is like, it's a little awkward at times, but it's smooth, it's repeatable.
It's just the shot selection for me. I mean, you know, it's not like he's shooting crazy high percentages, but his shot selection isn't awesome for me. So maybe, you know, if he gets a coach to help him take better shots or make better decisions in those shots, possibly those percentages go up. You know, Dennis Smith Jr., again, not to keep using that example, but the difference between Dennis Smith Jr. and being successful and being out of the NBA is Dennis Smith Jr. can't finish around the rim, and he can get there every time. He can get there. He just can't finish. He doesn't draw fouls. If Jaden Ivey could draw fouls, again, the ceiling is up to him at that point.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think he needs to go and look for contact more and be that guy who's living at the line, you know, Corey Maggette style, 8-9 free throw attempts a game in his prime, for sure. But I do think he's going to be a better finisher at the rim either way than a guy like Dennis Smith Jr.
Sure.
He does need to work on he does have a tendency to always try to get back to his right hand. So, you know, that's something that will be an adjustment. And his mid-range game, I'm high on in the long run, but lower on in the short term because, you know, he's not there yet. But that – I love that perspective because a lot of people come into the draft or in the draft, and granted, he's my fourth-ranked prospect too, even though my 1 through 3 are probably not necessarily the same because I have AJ Griffin at 3. So I differ from the consensus in that way, but he is still my fourth-ranked prospect, even though some of the, you know, he's ahead of some of the other guys who are consensus above him. But I get the concerns, and like, and that's why I think this is beneficial because you're right. Like every year, we're proven that the guys who go in the top 4, top 5 are not the 5 best players in the draft. Every single year, that's how it shakes out, and the order of consensus is never the order that guys actually get picked. So would it shock me if Jaden Ivey was, you know, not one of the top 3 or 4 players in this draft? It wouldn't. It wouldn't. That is an outcome that is a realistic possibility for almost every player in the draft. At number five,
I absolutely love this player. Way more. Again, I've never heard of this guy. I was hyped watching his videos. Benedict Mathurin, I think, is a ton of fun. This guy can finish around the rim. I love his size. He's crazy athletic. You know, I'm stoked for him in his dunk contest when that eventually happens. As someone who hates the dunk contest, this guy has to compete. He's nuts at what he can do. He can dribble. He can shoot. He can dribble and shoot. He can catch and shoot. You know, I'm not sure what his defense is like, but if this guy, again, can get to the free throw line or play defense, I think he's an all-star player. You know, worst case, I think he could possibly be, a not as good shooter as like Buddy Hield in that some regard. But I feel like with his athleticism, what he can do, it's nuts. I love his size. I love what he can bring. If he's a good defensive player, I think, you know, this guy is on it. I could see him on a championship team, what he can do.
Mathurin's a lot of fun. And he is a guy who I think it's possible that he's available to the Knicks as well. His range is pretty scattered all over the place. I think this is probably the high end for him as to where he's being like mocked. But I've seen him, you know, from anywhere from 5 to, you know, probably back of the lottery. And he is a lot of fun. Another guy could have came out last year, went back to school and improved his game. I think that, you know, right now he's mostly a guy who plays off ball. And that maybe that's a little bit to do with the role that he played at Arizona, who had a lot of guys who could handle and run offense. So, but the way that he's able to affect the game without having to have the ball in his hands, I think is a big time benefit because, you know, that means he could fit into any offense and it's not necessarily like you're projected, like he has to have the ball to be effective. This is a guy you could pro all 30 teams. He'll find himself a role. Great physical profile, crazy athletic. I think the Mathurin selling point is, you know, if he develops the on-ball stuff the way his ceiling indicates he might have in him, you're looking at maybe like a Victor Oladipo Indiana version type of guy who's bigger than Oladipo at the same time. So that is, I think, his high-end outcome. Been worst case, he's, you know, a guy that you're not going to miss on. He's going to be a good NBA player. It's just what level does he reach? At number 4.
I got Keegan Murray. I loved watching Keegan Murray. He's humongous. You know, I he's a big guy already, and his frame looks like he can grow and get even bigger. I think he can score from everywhere. He's good around the rim. You know, he can catch and shoot. I love his pick and roll. I mean, especially at that size. I could see him in an NBA offense. You know, I don't see this isn't a miss for me. I could see what he can offer, what he can bring to a team. He can kind of do a little bit of everything. I didn't see a lot of the videos of him creating his own shot, but, and I didn't see anything in regards to like defense, but he's just a humongous person. I can see what he can bring to NBA offenses, and that pick and roll between, you know, that he can do everything else if he's got a good point guard around him, you know, and that I'm stoked for. I think he, you know, that size, you just can't beat it.
Keegan Murray is a favorite over at No Ceilings. Another guy saw from behind the bench, and I really wanted to get to the arena early so I can watch how he worked out pregame. His level of focus was the most impressive out of any of the guys that I saw live this year. This dude was completely locked in. He is this is a Larry Tominia player to a T. 6'9", long arms. You know, you said you didn't see a ton of defense, but I think he was at over two blocks, over a steal. Like, this dude is switchable. He looks like he could check the modern NBA wings. Like, this is the guy that eventually you want to throw on Jason Tatum in the playoffs. I think mentality-wise, they're not like one-to-one comps as far as like play style, but like there's some Al Horford in him as far as like how he approaches the game and the kind of effect. Tyler Metcalf from No Ceilings kind of refers to him as death by a thousand cuts, where like he's not flashy. He's not going to wow you on a one-on-one level, but he's just so effective at doing what he does consistently. And then you look up at the scoreboard and he's got 26 and 12 with, you know, three steals and two blocks, and he hit three threes. So Keegan Murray, I think, is one of the safest players in the draft. He's a guy that I've been told, like, don't be shocked if he's the guy that actually ends up going in the top four and ahead of some of the guys that we haven't talked about yet. So
I didn't pick 14. I think this is a no brainer for the Kings. I didn't pick it. I didn't do my draft mock draft that way. I think he's the safest player, especially for the Kings in that circumstance. I think he fits great next to De'Aaron Fox. I love it.
I think a lot of Kings fans are on board with that. I think he's definitely a guy that some Kings fans want for a lot of those reasons. Cause he's kind of, in a lot of ways, it seems like he's bust proof. Right. As long as there's no injuries. All right. Before we get to the top three, let's head back to the chat, see what's going on in the chat. Comedos Comedy says Clay has a wide base in regards to AJ Griffin's wide shooting base. Let's see.
Clay also has like the fastest shot, like close to in the game.
Yes. Camitos, Mr. Ray says, Ivor Davis to Detroit is my dream scenario. Sharp is too much of an unknown, and Mathurin doesn't possess enough long-term upside as a creator, playmaker to warrant taking top five. Mino F says, Ivy at 6? Explanation point. But Mr. Ray says, Ivy at 6. That's an interesting take. Not unfounded, though. Alex Johnson says, I agree with a casual NBA fan. You don't know. Ivy could turn out to be worse than Dennis Smith Jr. History is littered with surefire players and guys with high upsides. Don't believe the hype. And Kurt says, fun fact, Keegan shot 44% from three over his last 23 games. Shout out to everybody in the chat. Make sure you are smashing the like button and subscribing if you aren't yet. All right. It is time for the top three. For anybody who is new, jumped into the stream midstream, Larry is a big NBA fan, casual draft observer, loves draft night, hasn't done any research beyond the homework that I gave him to look at the top 11 prospects on the draft DAC rankings at noceilingsnba.com and to order them in which he feels that he should order them based on the casual approach of watching YouTube highlights, scouting videos. All right. At number three.
So again, the top three is obviously the three biggest names that everyone has. And I promise you, I did not come into this assignment knowing that, hey, these three names are the three names that everybody knows. And that's who I'm going to put top three. That's not how I came into this. As I explained in the beginning, I knew the name Jabari Smith. I wouldn't even guess what position that he could play for because I just have no clue. I couldn't tell you. I knew Paolo played for Duke. That's as far as I got for you. So, you know, that being said, I had no idea their size, attributes, or anything like that when I, you know, came up with this task. But after watching their highlights, I think deservedly they're the top three for a reason. I, you know, that being said, I got Jabari Smith number three. You know, he's an absolute monster. You know, he's just a monster. His catch and shoot potential, he can shoot over everyone. I think he's a good passer. He's a smart player. I want to see more from pick and roll, and I want to see him be able to put the ball on the floor more and be able to dribble. But I didn't see much mid-range work. I want to see more of that mid-range, but I want to be able, you know, that being said, I just think these top three guys I think are all pretty can't miss, and I feel like he's there. So, I mean, his size, it's very Brandon Ingram-esque of what he has to offer in that regard. He's just a humongous person who can shoot the ball.
Yeah, he's 6'10", and he shot over 40% from three on high volume, hitting ridiculously tough shots. And he is an unbelievable on-ball defender. Like, he could switch out on the perimeter, and right. He could stick with guards. He could guard wings. Like, at baseline, he can guard basically 1 through 5 situationally while knocking down 40% of threes. I think you're spot on. One of the big concerns is his ability to create his own shot by handling the ball.
Great.
He doesn't have the tightest of handles.
That's what I got from watching his videos. And that's why he's number three for me. And I know a lot of mock drafts have him going number one, but that's, you know, just from when I was watching, there's nothing of where he's just putting the ball on the floor and driving.
Yeah. And he also had a really tough time finishing at the rim this year. He has one of the lowest field goal percentages over the last X amount of years for potential top five guys finishing at the rim, which is another concern. But I think that I'm not super concerned about that long term. In the short term, maybe. In the long term, not so much. He also played next to a much bigger human who could be a first round pick, probably a second round pick, who ended up averaging close to 5 blocks a game this year. So, and he's not necessarily a floor spacer. So he was dealing with a packed paint. And I think, you know, when you play with a guy like that, there's going to be more defenders there. It's going to be tighter. It's going to be harder to finish. So a little context with that. But yeah, Jabari is one of those guys. Like, what team isn't he going to play for? He's going to play for every
season. What he can do, what he offers, what he can do. Again, it's very Brandon Ingram to me, is that I want Brandon Ingram on every team. I'm one of the highest people on Brandon Ingram since I've watched him. I'm all in, and I want him to be on a really good team. I just want to see what he can do in a big moment. So, you know, I don't see a situation where Jabari Smith just is a complete bust. I just don't see it.
And Jabari's also got that gene that you love, where like he's D'ing somebody up, forces a turnover, like strips it, goes off the guy's, you know, leg, and then he's clapping in their face. Like, he's got that intensity where, you know, he does for a guy who's potentially gonna be the number one pick, he does a lot of the little things that you want in your star because it permeates down the line to the rest of the team. All right. At number two.
Number two, I got Paolo Banchero.
That was better. Paolo Banchero.
Paolo Banchero. So I have him number two. You know, again, he's another one of these guys that I had absolutely no idea what I was getting myself into when I started watching his videos. Wow, he's huge. He is a monster of a person. What I got from watching a lot of what he can do, it's a very Carmelo Anthony type mid game where he's just so big to where he's bigger than the small forwards. And he's faster than the power forward. So it's just like they don't know what to do with him. In that regard, he's also too big and too strong to where if he misses, he's getting his own rebounds, which reminds me a lot of Melo stuff. You know, he doesn't look overly athletic, but he's too big and too fast for his size, for what he can do, and just overpowering.
Yeah, I mean, I saw him twice this year, and the first time I saw him, I was like, I don't even know what I'm looking at.
He's a monster. Like, he's an absolute monster.
He's 6'10", 250, and it's right. Like, legit size. And he handles the ball like a guard. I mean, the Melo comp is one that he's gotten all year. I love that you touched on. Yeah, I love that you touched on. He's also gotten a little Julius Randle comp. So, you know, but both Knicks. But I love that you touched on his offensive rebound ability down there, like Melo, because he has that. Like, he's got
That's literally what reminds me of it. He'll shoot over you, and then he'll just go get his own rebound and put it back in.
Yeah, and I mean, like, the three-point shot comes and goes. There's some mechanical stuff that needs to be fine-tuned, but there's nothing broken about it that it's – and he's still going to be enough of a threat that you're going to guard him out there.
Yeah.
You know, you still have to guard him out there. And what you love about him is, like, he's a really good playmaker. He didn't get the opportunity all the time at Duke this year because, you know, when we talk about with AJ Griffin, like they had Wendell Moore, who's potentially a first round pick, Trevor Keels, potentially a first round pick, Jeremy Roach, who's a point guard on the team. And then he's basically the fourth guy as a ball handler. And then AJ Griffin's getting a few reps here and there. So he kind of is one of those guys where like he might have a year in the NBA where you look at him, you're like, this guy's averaging almost 7 assists a game. Like that's insane for at his size with that skill set.
I just think, you know, he's going to command double teams. It's good. He's going to do it. And it's going to be
his,
you know,
footwork is insane in the mid post. Like,
right. I have no idea if he's going to be a Jokic type, you know, player in regards to being that good, but in regards to commanding double teams and passing out when you're that tall and that big, you know, it's easier to get assists that way. But I mean, Jokic, one of the best passers ever, but you know, just in regards to commanding double teams and passing out, he's too goddamn big.
For sure. He could see over the defense but he could also run pick and roll for you.
Right.
And be a playmaker in that regard. So it's the thing about him that like he's one of those guys that you have to wonder if he's going to maximize his potential. But even if he doesn't maximize his potential, he's still so damn big and strong and skilled that like he's probably the most surefire lock to be an all-star.
The only way he doesn't reach potential is he gets Zion size. Like, you know, if he starts gaining weight, if he can manage his weight and manage his body, he's going to be just a good player for a ton of years.
I agree. Paolo Banchero at number two. All right. Your number one player.
That leaves, you know, obviously that leaves Chet Holmgren number one. You know, again, another player that I've heard his name a ton. I had no idea what I was getting myself into when I watched him. You know, tall, white guys. I didn't go into it expecting to like Chet Holmgren. But after I watched the videos, wow, he's so athletic. For what he can do at his size, it's very Kevin Durant-type athleticism. No, I don't think he's as good as Kevin Durant. But I'm talking about just the athleticism of what he can do at his size. You know, he can do everything Porzingis can do, just more. You know, he's so much more athletic than someone like KP that it's just he can put the ball on the ground. He can shoot. He can, you know, he spreads the what he can offer, just spreading the floor in general. You know, he can help defense. He can do really kind of everything that you need. And what I kept reading or what I kept seeing about is, all right, well, what is he going to do against someone like Jokic? What is he going to do, you know, against these humongous centers, you know, these powerful? What is he going to do against Embiid? What is he going to do against – what the hell are they going to do against him? You know, that's my take back, you know. If your plan is to go into this with Chet shutting down Embiid, that's probably not a good game plan. But sure. I want to see Embiid chase down, you know, chase Chet around. I want to see Jokic chase Chet around. His size and his athleticism and how fast he can do it is crazy. And I understand he's skinny. I get it. But that being said, you know who's also skinny and a great defender? Still Kevin Durant. You know, Kevin Durant, no one criticizes how, you know, him on defense. Everyone praises his defense. It's the same attributes. It's very similar. Kevin Durant also is not going in there and guarding Joel Embiid. That's not what his role is. You know, the plan would be to have, you know, your Jalen Duren type players to go in there and guard these type of guys. You know, you're going to have your specific lineups and your specific extra centers to guard these guys. And that's okay. Chet can still play. He can play power forward. He doesn't need to play center 24/7. He doesn't need to be, you know, a spread five option. He can do anything. He, you know, in regards to what he can offer at his size, in regards to putting the ball on the ground and dribbling and driving, there's no one else in the draft at his size that can do what he can do from the guys who, you know, that are 6'10 and up. He's the best all-around player that I saw from what they can offer. It's just, I don't see how this guy's a miss. I see every, you know, what his shooting percentages are good. Everything he, you know, there's a million block videos. And I'm not even factoring that in. But granted, you know, he'll get his help defense straight up blocks and everything of that sort. I don't plan to see him just swatting the ball out of bounds every game. But again, remember, Porzingis did a lot of that too when he was, you know, when he first came to the league. But Porzingis, the athleticism that Porzingis lacked, Chet has all of it.
Yeah, he's my number one guy too, by a big margin too. I love your counter to how is he going to guard Jokic and Embiid to how are they going to guard him? Because obviously that's the big narrative. How is Chet going to manage, you know, be a center in the NBA and deal with the physicality? He's too frail. He's too skinny. He's too everything. He's never, it's not like he has an injury history coming with him right now. So it's hard to project somebody that all, and I get it. He's skinny and the NBA, like it's a long season, whatever, but the NBA also has shifted away from guys like Embiid and Jokic to where it's about skill and versatility and length and IQ now. And those are all like, things that he excels at.
How many centers are there that you're absolutely terrified of? You know, I'd be fine with Chet on DeAndre Ayton because I'm not worried about DeAndre Ayton just, you know, dribbling on him, backing him down and dunking. How many post-playing centers are there in the NBA?
Right.
Under four?
I'm sure Suns fans would be surprised if DeAndre Ayton did that as well, like, right. To anybody.
So, like, besides Embiid and, you know, Jokic, you can put him on Gobert because it's not like Gobert's offense is all of a sudden going to start dominating Chet. I wouldn't be concerned. If Gobert is backing down Chet and doing post moves after we hope he can catch the ball, we'll take that shot for whatever team, you know, he actually winds up with. So, you know, that being said, on the other side, though, can you picture any version of Gobert chasing Chet around? It would be an absolute nightmare.
It's a hard thing to counter because he's, you know, like going back to Banchero, we were like, he's too big for smaller guys and too fast for bigger guys. Like Chet's like that, too. It kind of in the opposite ways. And
he shoots at his high point. That's what I really enjoy. Like, he already knows how to shoot at his high point. You know, you can see a lot of these Dirk mid-range shots that he's taking as well. He's going to be able to get his shot whenever. Again, Kevin Durant's one of the best players of all time. I hate using that comp and people comparing it to that. But Kevin Durant shoots at his high point. No one blocks Kevin Durant. And Chet can do a lot of the same stuff. So, again, Chet's not Kevin Durant. It's very different. But in regards to size and the way he can shoot, based off of the high point, I think it's a huge comp in that regard.
Yeah.
If you want to say Dirk, I don't know. His high point at which he could shoot from anywhere, his shot's not getting blocked.
No.
Or Gobert or one of these centers, if that's the plan that we're going to use to cover him, it's going to be one of two things. Either he's going to play them off the floor, like Gobert already has a ton of times in the playoffs and everything that sort, or they're going to come out. They got to come out to him, and, you know, that opens out other stuff.
And one of the other, if you go and watch the Memphis game against Jalen Duren in the tournament, Memphis's game plan to start the game was, we're going to go to Jalen Duren on the block and try to give him opportunities to post Chet up and bully him. And what happened was he did that and Chet sent his shot directly back to him.
Right.
The first couple of times, because one of the things with Chet, he's skinny, but he's a bad motherfucker. Like, he's competitive. He thinks he is the best player in the draft.
Those long arms are going to make up for your size.
His length is insane.
It's insane. And again, in regards to post moves and drawing fouls, there's no centers that can do that. It's Joel Embiid and Jokic. I can't think of another one off the top of my head where I'm worried about a center getting the ball in the paint and being terrified of what they can offer on a consistent basis.
Right, and Jokic and Embiid play in different conferences, so you're only going to run into one during the playoffs, potentially. And again, like you said, like Chet's probably going to be a power forward more than a center. He's obviously going to play center at some points, but that's a credit to his versatility that he can actually play with another center that is manning the paint because he can go out and stretch the floor. He could handle the ball. He can create his own shot. And he didn't get to show off a lot of his offense at Gonzaga because they ran their offense through a post player in Drew Timmy, who was an older player. And, he was one of the best players in college basketball. So it's not like it's a terrible strategy, but I had an executive text me who was like, I just spent 3 days with Chet. Keep all of the stock that you have in him.
I just think that what he can do is just, he's going to be a matchup nightmare. He really is. Cause again, like, let's say, again, I'm a Knicks fan. Let's say Mitch Robinson playing against him. That's a nightmare for the Knicks. Is Mitch going to go out to the three-point line? And if he is, you know, Chet's going to drive past him.
Not only that, you're taking, I mean, you don't want Mitch hanging out around there all game because you're taking him away from the hoop.
And it's just a nightmare. Then what are you going to put Julius Randle on? It's just a nightmare in regards to what we can offer. And let's go the other way. He can play with a guy like Mitch Robinson. He can play with a guy like Julius Randle. He can fit on every team.
Every team in any scenario. You nailed Chet Holmgren. You nailed a lot of your evaluations, which, you know, makes me wonder what we're doing watching all these games when we can get pretty damn close by just watching YouTube highlights, guys. Let's run through Larry's list again from start to finish and see how close he got to the last draft rankings, which is all of the big boards from the Main Street outlets and averaged out. So Larry's list is at 11, Dyson Daniels.
To the Knicks, who I'm already mad about Knicks Twitter being upset that Thibodeau's not playing him enough after he shoots, 20% from the three-point line. So I'm excited to be unhappy as a Knicks fan continuing.
Okay. I mean, it wouldn't be an episode with a New York person if we didn't complain about Knicks fans. At number 11, Dyson Daniels of the G League Ignite. At number 10, Jalen Duren of Memphis. At number 9, Johnny Davis from Wisconsin. At number 8, AJ Griffin from Duke. At number 7, Shaedon Sharpe from Kentucky, kind of. At number 6, Jaden Ivey from Purdue. At number 5, Benedict Mathurin from Arizona. At number 4, Keegan Murray from Iowa. Number 3, Jabari Smith from Auburn. At number 2, Paolo Banchero from Duke. And at number 1, Chet Holmgren from Gonzaga. All right. On the draft rankings, at number 11 comes Jalen Duren. So you were one spot off from Jalen Duren compared to consensus. At number 10, Dyson Daniels, which you were also one spot off from the consensus rankings. At number 9 is Johnny Davis, exactly where you have Johnny Davis. At number 8, you have we have Benedict Mathurin. You have Mathurin at 5. So we're 3 spots higher on Mathurin based on the highlights than consensus. At number 7, we have AJ Griffin. You had AJ Griffin at 8. At number 6, Shaedon Sharpe. You had Shaedon Sharpe at 7. So 1 spot off from Shaedon Sharpe. At number 5, Keegan Murray, which you had Keegan at 4. At number 4 is Jaden Ivey, of which you had Ivey at 6. So you're 2 spots lower on Jaden Ivey. At number 3, Paolo Banchero from Duke. You have Paolo at 2. Paolo was the number 2 guy for a lot of the year. At number 2 is Chet Holmgren, who occupied the number 1 spot for the majority of the year. You have Chet at 1. And at number 1, Jabari Smith, you have Jabari at 3. So you're pretty spot on. If you put your big board up to anybody else's on draft Twitter, it would hold up pretty well, with the only major difference being Benedict Mathurin and Jaden Ivey. Benedict Mathurin maybe being a little high, Jaden Ivey maybe being a couple spots too low. Otherwise, you are almost nearly spot on with consensus based on 10 minutes of research watching YouTube highlights. So I'm not quite sure what that tells us result of my hypothesis is.
How about this? I'm interested, maybe if we did this exercise next year and I want to spend more time, maybe get like 20 prospects and I go with 10 to try to, widen the range of crazy. But, in general, I think it was a really fun exercise. I'm really happy that I actually spent the time to put the real work in to do it. It made me more excited for the upcoming draft, knowing that, now I have some actual skin in the game for these players. I think it's a lot of fun to be able to do it this way. But yeah, I'm excited overall, and this was a lot of fun. Thank you for asking me to do this. This was cool in that regard. I hope some people cared or got some feedback from it. I think overall, you can get a lot from these videos in that regard. I obviously didn't put the work in that any of you guys do or anything of that sort. But, that being said, you could really kind of get an idea of watching enough NBA player, you know, NBA games and seeing how you can try to figure out these players and how they're going to fit in the NBA and how do I see them possibly on contending for the, you know, playoff contention.
Yeah, for sure. And I think sometimes people get caught up in like how successful a player has been in their college season versus how does it translate to an NBA game? And those mindsets are a little bit different because a lot of times these guys who are having this success are not going to walk into the same role as an NBA player as they were playing in college. And you have to see how do they adjust to maybe coming off the bench or not having the ball in their hands as much, not getting as much touches. What can they do to affect the game in other ways? And, you know, outside of like the top 3 to 4 guys, that's probably the reality for most of the guys that they're going to have to adjust their games in certain ways. But I think that's what's interesting about having Mathurin at 5, because it's easy to see how his game translates to the NBA in a way that you could actually see him impacting a game next year, depending on the team that he goes to. Not to say that he's going to be a good player, because most rookies are not good players, even the ones that are actually good, but you actually see him playing minutes. So, yeah, thanks for putting the actual time to come in and do this, coming in prepared with notes, and pretty much nailing the entire drafts of the top 11 that I gave you. Without talking about it, you texted me about Chet and Shaedon Sharpe were the only two guys that you were just like, I have to get this off my chest before the podcast. And I think for the obvious reasons for both of them.
Yeah, I think they're both for me. Like, again, I think they're the biggest shockers for me because, you know, I've heard Chet's name a ton of times. I couldn't picture out what he looked like. You know, if I had a guess, I probably would have thought Chet looked like Drew Timmy. I had no idea. So it's like when I actually saw what this is, I was like, Jesus Christ, like this, this is insane for the athleticism, his size, and Shaedon Sharpe. I just didn't know the story. I knew nothing of what this is and just the raw talent that this guy has. Again, he could be the best player in this draft. Like, you know, there's an absolute chance that he's the best player out of all of this, but it's terrifying.
It is. And that's what's fun about the draft. It's a complete crapshoot wild card for the majority of these guys. And chances are, as you mentioned earlier, half of them are probably not going to be.
Yeah, it's circumstance too. You know, I don't think that gets looked at enough. It's circumstance. You know, a lot of these guys need to be put in positions that can possibly succeed or be in a position to be allowed to fail. You know, and that's, I think, every player is different. What every player's needs are different. So, you know, I think a lot of that, unfortunately, for these players is a lot of luck.
For sure. It's there's so many factors that go into how a player develops. And, you know, what happens if Jaden Ivey does go to the Kings and he's playing, he's playing next to De'Aaron Fox and Davion Mitchell, who are both good players, but like that backcourt is just a mismatch of guys. And Jaden Ivey can play off ball. He showed it this year. He did a lot of off ball stuff, but it's still not ideal. You want to see him play with the ball in his hands a little bit more often. So it's all circumstance, because he would be a much better fit next to Cade Cunningham than he would be in next to De'Aaron Fox and Davion and the Kings. So that's part of the equation, and it's something that you don't actually get the answer to until draft night. So a lot of the pre-draft work is, you know, it's a scientific experiment. You're forming a hypothesis on a player, and some of it's not up to you. So this is a lot of fun. You can follow Larry at Larry Villains on Twitter. DM him if you want, you know, if you need your mortgage done. So
that'd be nice.
He can do that for you. And make sure that you subscribe to the NBA the DraftAck NBA Draft Podcast. Rate the show if you haven't already. That would be dope. Subscribe to No Ceilings TV's YouTube channel. If you haven't yet, head to NoCeilingsNBA.com and find our draft guide that we released. 58 prospect breakdown, scouting reports. All there available for purchase, directly sent to you in a PDF format. It's beautiful. And the crew worked really hard on it. And until next time, we are out. Thanks for rocking with us. Peace.